Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45 from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing, Stas?
Good.
Yeah, good. Yeah?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell him why you're good.
Because he got really freaked out.
All right. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. We got Dave in the booth. How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah?
How about you?
Doing all right.
All right.
And before I say, we have some special guests, but call in all of your cooking or other kind of, any kind of question, really. Nastasia, do we really care what kind of questions they ask?
No, any issue.
Any issue. Mm-hmm. So we're going beyond just straight cooking issues, and we're just any issues.
Issues.
Call in your questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. And I guess it's been kind of a rough week for a lot of the countries, so we should start out just, you know, our thoughts are going out to everyone who's been, you know, hit either by Harvey or Irma or any one of the other things that's going on right now. But we have two guests, longtime recurring guests. We got Paul Pote. Adams from what are you at now? What are you doing now?
He Cooks Illustrated.
Gives you email.
I don't read my emails.
No, you give his email address.
Oh, I don't read. Oh, that's not. I didn't give his full email. So you're at Cooks Illustrated now full time?
Yes.
Are you an illustrated cook full time? Do you live in Boston now?
No, I live in Queens.
Let me ask you a question, Paul.
Any question?
So I have the entire first several years of Cooks Illustrated going back to 1993, which is when it started.
Wow.
And some of the original Cooks Illustrated recipes from 1993, like, for instance, their muffin recipe, still I use that muffin recipe. It's a good muffin recipe.
Yeah.
Here's what I don't like about Cooks Illustrated. They're always like the best this, the best that. You can't say anything's the best anything. It's like here's a path.
Clickbait.
Here's the path.
Have you had better muffins?
I haven't really tried. I was like,
then it's the best.
I was like, these muffins are good enough.
It's the best.
But then how do they, then like, here's the thing. If you've been reading it since 1993, they'll come back like 20 years later and they'll write the best and it's a different recipe. I'm like, can't both be freaking true.
Well, you have to check the date.
So wait, it's
new
not,
bests now supersede no.
Just say,
previous bests.
Just say, here is an interesting take on what the journey to muffinhood looks like. First of all, like
a better muffin than any preceding muffin.
Do you like muffins?
No.
What the hell's wrong with you? Nastasia, do you like... Well, before we get into this, we also have Lauren Ressler, who is partner in the Empyon Empire, formerly pastry chef at the Empyon Empire, but now just general impresario and wizard. How you doing?
I'm lovely.
Yeah, and this is awesome because this is the first time in a long time it is take your kid to work life, but... Kids, but not mine this time. So who do we got here?
Jackson. We've got Jackson, who's 2.5 years old.
Hey, Jackson, that's a good age. Stay
and
that way.
On his second day of school.
Ooh.
So super exciting.
Yeah, nice.
And we have Parker, who is 3 months old.
He's got a question for you.
What is yes, darling.
He's going to ask a pastry-related question. All right, so what do you got going on? What's going on? What's shaking? What's interesting?
Well, you know, I've had two kids, so that takes a bit of a toll on working the line in a restaurant.
I bet.
So pretty much once I was pregnant enough with Jackson and more of an inconvenience in the kitchen than a help, I've kind of been on a little retirement. But doing cakes on the side, you know, helping out friends with birthday parties, and then it just so happened that a cake was Instagrammed by DJ Natalie from Baby DJ School in Brooklyn, and then all of a sudden a few of her clients were reaching out to me via Instagram. Oh, I want that cake too. I want that cake too. So kind of spiraled into a little side business of kids' birthday cakes. And
so like first couple things, what's Baby DJ? What is this?
Oh, Baby DJ
School. That was my question too.
Yeah, it's actually quite a phenomenon in Williamsburg. Really cool young lady named Natalie started this group. She just teaches kids anywhere from infants to young toddlers, I think to 4 years old or something like that, how to DJ, play with DJ equipment.
Like old school, like scratch, like crossfade?
Yeah, she has like all this different, you know, equipment that she brings with her to either someone's house if they're hosting it, or if they come to her apartment where she hosts it as well. She even did it in McCarran Park a couple summers ago.
Please tell me they're like rocking like the Technics platters with wiggles on it, with the wiggles. Please, please.
No, it's actually like she has old school records, like things that I've never even heard of. But
so it's not like one little duck.
No, no, but she'll like, what was it? I think she played, she actually played You Down With OPP the other day, one time, and I was like, should we be playing that for children?
Well, I've noticed that A, kids don't understand what that means, and for some reason, over the past 5 years, when it was actually relatively current, when I was in high school, college, like, it would get played, but, like, it wouldn't get played at weddings. Now, every wedding plays it, and I was at a wedding for a friend of mine a couple weeks ago, and they played OPP, not really appropriate for a wedding, and for those of you that don't know what this song's about, not appropriate for a wedding.
You don't know?
Family show.
Well, some people say it stands for property, Nastasia. But then the minister was freaking getting down to it.
No.
The freaking minister was like,
other people's.
You know, it depends. It can be, but the good thing
is he has no idea what it means.
The good thing is it's gender neutral because they both property. Start with P.
Yeah.
Well, or certain euphemisms for them both start with P.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyway. So the point is, but that's one of those, like, now it's like a wedding standard thing, which I had no idea. Like, why would you play that?
Well, what I've been noticing, every wedding I've been to this year, the DJ is a baby.
I think this all goes back to Natalie.
It does.
So now, okay, so what style of, first of all, is this like intensely rich people's cakes?
Well, no, I mean, like, I kind of charge as detailed as they need it to be. So I don't even have like a set pricing yet. I'm still working on that. But like one party I did was actually for one woman who had two boys. And so I had basically this cake that on top of it, there's a rectangular smash cake, which
But what's
is,
a smash cake?
Oh, for first birthdays.
What is this?
The kid gets their own individual little cake that they can destroy and get all over themselves. And
just thinking about that makes me queasy.
But that because then, you know, you're not ruining everyone else's cake bite.
No. So was it on top, though? So now
top,
I have mangled particles?
No, because right. So what I do is I have the regular cake, which is like maybe a big rectangle, and then a smaller rectangle on top, which is the DJ booth. I cover that in like fondant, and then I make a little gum paste avatar that is similar looking to the child.
Nice.
And they're like with headphones on,
but like
and
for real made,
sunglasses.
Not like 3D printed. You're not
no,
3D printing
it's like,
the child's
like
head.
You know, right. And they're standing up like spinning, and then when it comes time to serve the cake, I just take off the DJ booth, give that to the individual birthday kid. And then everyone else gets clean cake that's not...
Nice, not yucky. Mangled. Yeah, no one really wants that mangled cake. Although the fondant's a nice touch because you can brush off most disgusting things.
Of course.
I, by the way, I'm this guy. I love actual fondant. Like, I like
You're
it.
You're like
with the
1% in the world.
With the almond paste underneath, like old school
Marzipan.
Stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. And you know what I don't like? Buttercream. But apparently I'm the only guy. I mean, like, I'm not afraid of grease. You know what I mean? So I don't know why I'm not a huge buttercream fan, but I'm just not.
But there are different styles of buttercream.
Yes.
There's that whole literally butter powdered sugar and vanilla extract. But then there's also what I do is an Italian meringue buttercream.
Yeah.
Egg white buttercream.
I mean, I would actually, you know what I love? Like, okay, so I like fondant icing. I love even though you can't do it on this kind of cake because it doesn't last, I like the old school straight up meringue icings. Mm-hmm. Those are delicious.
Oh, yeah.
I like cream cheese icing on a carrot cake. I like, do you like that? Do you like the that crunchy coconut German chocolate cake icing stuff?
I've always loved German chocolate cake.
Really?
I do. Just, that's like one of my favorites.
Really? Yeah. Paul, where are you standing on this?
I like it.
I imagine this is the thing that Nastassia does not like.
I like it.
You like it?
Mm-hmm. See, LA girls unite.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. That's like right up, it's got like little things in it. Nastassia hates things with little things.
Mm-hmm. Pistachios and coconut. Or not pistachios, pecans and coconut, usually.
But you hate pecan pie, right, Stas?
I don't like pecan pie.
Okay.
I don't either.
Oh, Jesus.
We're
all right.
From the same
Paul?
Area, but like...
Love it.
Ah, there you go.
We
okay.
were actually born in the same hospital.
Oh, yeah. Come on, really?
Like a month apart from each other.
Really?
I found out because she was listening to the same music that they played in L.A.
What does that mean?
I don't know, like a certain era.
I don't
know.
Like what, like Sublime?
Yeah, possibly.
Kind of, but a little deeper. Than
deeper?
Remember, yeah, like obscure. You were listening
There's nothing deeper than Sublime.
Like
literally, like if you take its name at face value.
I think you actually even said also that you. I was talking to someone and I said like
yeah,
a,
said
word
a word
or something and
like,
you were like, wait, that's my area.
Yeah.
Like Covina. You're also from Covina?
I was technically born in, in La Cañada.
I don't know what that means. Is that good or bad?
No, that's the town.
All right.
But I grew up in Arcadia, California.
Also, is that good or bad?
Now?
It just is.
It just is.
All right, so back to cakes.
Exactly.
So, like, there's a long-going thing with cakes in my mind. Maybe I'm just... Because I like to create fights in my mind,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, between groups of people. So the fight that I have in my mind is the image cake, the cake as, like... object
mm-hmm.
and then the cake as flavorful thing that I eat.
Right.
Do you think that's a real dichotomy, and B, where do you stand on that?
I always, and my husband is very much this way too, is flavor is the first thing. You have to have a good cake that's nice and moist, doesn't matter what it looks like at the end if it tastes great.
By the way, she mentioned her husband, that's Alex Stupak, and just to let you know, if you said something tasted good and it wasn't, it was low quality, he might... I'm not saying he would punch you, but he
no.
wouldn't be... He's not... He doesn't...
He'll death stare you.
Yeah, he doesn't enjoy things that he thinks are bad. Would you say it's accurate?
Doesn't enjoy things he thinks are bad.
In other words, he doesn't, like... He can't, like, let things slide so
oh, yeah,
much.
No.
That's
no.
sort of just like you.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know, we're different about it, though. I mean, like, he's really, like, I feel like I've seen him, I don't know him that well, but I feel like I've seen him be kind of, like, deeply emotionally hurt by a low-quality dish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
other people's acceptance of a low-quality dish.
I was going to say, but at the same time, at home, he'll, like, eat a mayonnaise sandwich, you know.
Mayonnaise is delicious. It's a good product.
We've actually talked about, instead of him having a man cave, having a mayonnaise cave.
Ooh, I like that. Mayonnaise cave. I'm not gonna give too much out, but you know, I'm working on a new bar right now, and we will have a mayonnaise program.
What?
Oh my goodness.
We're gonna have a mayonnaise program. We won't call it out, but like we are gonna have a wide variety of mayonnaises. I have found that mayonnaise is delicious. And for those people who do not enjoy mayonnaise, I'm not saying you have to have mayonnaise on a French fry, but if you don't like mayonnaise on a French fry, just grow up. Just grow up. You know what I mean? It's like, it tastes good.
It does.
It tastes good. You know? Like, when I was a kid, I would put... Now, this is bad. I would put mayonnaise on hot dogs when I was a kid.
Ew.
Why is that bad?
Because you're supposed to put mustard on a freaking hot dog.
Well, yeah. There are those diehards that only mustard or mustard and relish, maybe.
Mustard and kraut.
Oh, yes.
I'm a mustard and kraut fellow.
I mean, I was the kid who put mustard and ketchup on my hot dog. So.
Yeah, I did that sometimes when I was a kid. I sometimes would put all three.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you something about sauerkraut. I feel that the average American hasn't had... I'm sure the listeners here are otherwise, but the average American has not had good sauerkraut. The sauerkraut that you buy that's been like preserved and stabilized and whatever in the hell else they do. No offense to the Sabret Corporation, mm-hmm. but they're like Sacco sauerkraut that the average person is buying in a supermarket. It's garbage. Compared
yeah.
to real sauerkraut,
oh,
I mean, it's straight up garbage. It's not even the same product. It doesn't taste the same. It's like, it's not right.
No. The sauerkraut we make at our house, it stinks up the entire fridge, basically.
Yeah, but that's what you want.
That's what you want.
That's what you Okay, so back to the cakes.
Okay, so back to the cakes, yeah. So flavor, of course, is the first thing. I'm personally not a fan of too much gum paste and fondant as more so than the cake. Like, you know, you see all those things where it's like they have these beautiful sculpturesque cakes and stuff, but it's like 75% fondant or gum paste. And
for structure or just for looks?
Just for like the looks.
Right.
And to me, that's, I mean, it, yeah, it's art and all, but the kids, if it's for a kid's party, they want the cake. I mean, yeah. Unless you have a sheet cake in the back, which I'm totally down with.
But you are down with that. So you're down with the cake as like a hat. It's almost like an Easter bonnet. And you know, then you have like a sheet cake in the back.
I never thought I was. But then when I lived in Chicago for a year, I was working at a bakery, Bittersweet. It's called Bittersweet. We were all about making these faux cakes that, you know, are made of styrofoam and they're just decorated. And then they just have one little wedge cut out. That you insert real cake so that the bride and groom can do their ceremonial.
Oh, yeah. What are
ceremonial.
Your thoughts on that? That's creepy. It's
awesome.
Creepy, though.
But it's... No, because then in the back, everyone has not fondant-covered delicious cake.
Okay. They reuse that cake. That's what's creepy about it.
No, you don't reuse
maybe
it.
Maybe you didn't.
No.
Where does the wedge come from?
Come on, yeah.
They
basically have like a plywood styrofoam cake. And then they just insert the fake wedge for the cut and the face smash. I do not believe in the face smash, people. Does anyone here believe in the face smash?
What is that?
The bride and groom feed each other the first time.
And then you're like, oh, oops, and you shove it in their face.
No good.
The thing is it like I've heard that you like that people reuse the blank.
No, I've never ever heard that.
Because I'd be
did
those people get divorced or not? Did it stick? Was the marriage good? Because I don't want a cake that has a bad record.
No, because why would you pick, like, the bakery wouldn't go back and pick it up. Like, once you drop off a cake, that's it. You never see those people again.
Oh, I was thinking, because I associate it with like big houses that do weddings, like where they have like three weddings a day and they're just crank-a-lanking out.
No. Oh,
you know what I'm talking about?
No.
You've been there? It's like wedding.
No.
You know what I mean? Wedding machines.
No, because you can't also do that because the cake, the faux cake is completely covered in fondant. And then once a slice is taken out, you have a...
I'm making air quotes, people. What about the top three layers?
When I've done wedding cakes, actually, my husband and I never did that whole ceremonial eat your 1 year anniversary cake that's been in the freezer.
My cousin went into my aunt and uncle's house and took it and ate it.
Oh, yours?
Yeah.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Which cousin?
I'm not going to call him out on it.
Well, but my mom actually did save that top layer for us to have that ceremonial thing, and we never did it. And I think just last year she finally threw it out, or maybe this past year she just threw it out. We've been married for 10 years.
You didn't just eat it?
No, we've been married for 10 years. I'm not going to eat.
It's been frozen.
Yeah, frostbite. Might as well lick an ice cube.
I mean, but for tradition, I would lick an ice cube. I'm the guy who one of my greatest desires in life is to cook a woolly mammoth as it gets pitched out of the permafrost in Siberia because of global warming. All-time life goals, people. If you know anyone in Siberia who has access to any sort of woolly mammoth that's just starting to come out of the ice, so it's still frozen, you know, it's a mere 12,000 years old.
Oh, my.
That would be sweet. Wouldn't you eat that, Paul?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Do you know Paul has been on the Vomit Comet? Are you familiar with the Vomit Comet?
No.
So the Vomit... Parker's apparently familiar.
Definitely familiar.
With the Vomit Comet. But the, Vomit Comet is what they use to train astronauts. Do they allow, and so what they do is they fly parabolic trajectories so that you feel weightless when you're in air. And then I was like, well, maybe we could serve food on the Vomit Comet as part of a museum of food and drink kind of a thing. But then Peter was like, it's called the Vomit Comet. You can't serve food on something where half the people are projected to vomit. Paul, did you eat food on the Vomit Comet?
I didn't, but I would have. I certainly would have.
I don't think they would allow that stuff on the plane, would they? Would they allow you to bring like a Capri Sun pouch on the Vomit Comet?
Yeah, definitely. If you're paying.
Did you vomit on the Vomit Comet?
Only one person vomited.
Out of how many?
Out of at least 45 people.
Interesting fact for you Vomit Comet folks out there: you actually go weightless on the up trajectory, which I didn't realize. Hi. What's up? All right, so we're talking about cakes. So what's your favorite cake? What do kids like these days? And do you like... You said you like sheet cakes. I understand it's like... It's the best, like, icing to cake ratio.
Right,
and
exactly.
It's the best bake-off.
Yes.
In other words, like, you're only...
Even.
If you mess up, you're only messing up the edges, and the vast majority of your sheet cake is okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's something not as enjoyable about the square block of cake as... the sweet, sweet wedge of like good old fashioned American cake.
But I still do a layer with the sheet cake. So you still get a good
cut chunk.
In.
So it's not like Entenmann's.
No.
It's not like Entenmann's aluminum
foil.
No.
I like to do I don't do that for kids so much, but
she doesn't like the wall there.
Are you doing there, miss? Sorry.
Anyway, what's your favorite flavor there for the kids? I want chocolate.
You know, I do serve devil's food to kids.
That's
and
good.
Tell the parents that there is espresso powder in there. So
is there?
Oh, yeah.
You ever have kids running around and pooping out all over everything?
I drop off a cake and leave, so if that happens.
And then they drop it off and leave. So a funny story, a friend of mine who once babysat a small chihuahua. Now, things that chihuahuas should not have, chocolate and coffee. And this dog got into a couple chocolate-covered espresso beans, and apparently it was jumping. I don't own a chihuahua. Apparently the dog was jumping into the air and then projectile pooping onto the wall.
Wow.
And so I have this image of this, like,
how high did it get?
I don't know, like maybe like armadillo jumping height. You know how armadillos bounce? Like in my mind, this chihuahua is like boing, boing, pss, boing, pss, boing, pss, like all over the wall. That's my image.
It sounds amazing.
I know, but it's not really safe to do to a dog. A very small amount of chocolate can throw a dog for, you know, a pretty bad loop. All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What about carrot cake? That was my wedding cake.
I love carrot cake.
That's my favorite.
Except I don't like it with raisins in it.
Like, in general?
I don't like raisins in cake, yeah.
At all?
No.
Do you enjoy raisin cinnamon bread?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, for some reason, I don't know. Because, the crumb is much fluffier and finer on a carrot cake. And then you've got this raisin that just, it bites too much with me.
Do you like panettone?
Toasted, like a slice, not like just straight cut from the cake.
Because of the fruit?
I think so.
Do you like dense things like fruit cake?
You know, I honestly don't know that I've had a legit fruit cake. I really don't know that I have.
Paul, fruit cake?
It's good.
Nastasia?
I don't think I've had a real one.
Why? Because you're just opposed to the idea?
I've never come across one.
It's a gummy, dense block of sugar.
Where do you get it?
You buy it this year and eat it next year.
Mail order.
Oh.
The cake of record is Claxton's.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether or not... anyway, okay, let's answer some questions. You ever made buckwheat galettes?
No.
You think of crepes. They're like crepes, but they're made of buckwheat.
Yeah.
So anyway, I have a question. Should we get to some questions?
Sure.
Right. Paul, do you have any Cook's Illustrated stuff? You ever worked on crepes?
Never worked on crepes. I make buckwheat pancakes.
Yeah, but you cheat. You add regular flour to it, right? Or you go straight?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's the whole point of this freaking question. So, like, the thing is... Okay, first of all, I would have... This is from... Who's this from? This is from Caleb. I would have tested these recipes myself, except for I have no gas in my building. These idiots, I don't know their idiots. Maybe they're good people. Maybe they're good people and idiots. You can be an idiot and be a good person. You know what I mean? They broke through the gas line while they were working on our building, and now the whole building is out of gas. And they're like, I was like, okay, so like you're going to fix it like tomorrow? And they're like, the permitting's going to take like 6 weeks. The permitting's going to take 6 weeks. Now, people... I don't know if you know this. We live in New York City here. We pay a buttload of taxes to live in this freaking city. If an entire building with like 500 people in it like is not on – like has no gas, maybe you could expedite the freaking permit because you know it's just some person sitting in a room somewhere going You know what I mean? So it's like why can't they just like accelerate that for all the people that are there? You know what I mean? It's not like I'm trying to get a gas permit for a building that is, like, being built in 3 months.
Yeah.
And you're like, if you needed a permit now, why didn't you ask for it 6 weeks ago? You know, this, like, the thing just broke. Like, emergency permit.
And there are people living there.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, sure, like, you know, like, I can go out or, in fact, I have a really nice induction burner so I can cook without it. You know what I mean? But there's plenty of people who can't afford to necessarily eat out every night who, like, rely on their gas. Because it's not like we have, a lot of electricity in our apartments because New York City apartments, one of the reasons we don't often have, like, electric ovens or this kind of stuff is just because we don't have a big enough electric service into our units to be able to do it. But what if 6 weeks... Anyways, so
that's crazy.
So Caleb, I couldn't actually test this. But also, you know, I used to have a real crepe maker, a real crepe maker, gas with it. What?
How It's that big thing, right?
Yeah. I don't have it hooked up right now. I had it hooked up at the old place. I'm going to get it hooked up again. Dax misses it. I love it more than almost any other piece of hot side equipment because it just screams like a mother. It's so much better than any electric crate maker I've ever used or any wussy. Everyone's like, I make crepe cakes on my stove with my crepe pan. I'm like, no, you don't. You know what I mean? I'm like a real, like, I mean, you do. I'm not saying your crepes are bad. But if you like the actual, like, giant French-style street crepe.
I was going to say, do you have that big wooden dowel thing, too?
Replette? Yeah. Yes. I love the replette. So the replette looks like a squeegee. Like if you're driving down the Bruckner and there's traffic and someone comes with a squeegee. It's like that, but made of wood.
Wait, where did you get this crepe maker?
I went to France. I was on the street, and I had a crepe, and I was like, oh, this is the piece of equipment you need to do this. The stuff we have in the United States is garbage. And at that time, this is, you know, like 2 decades ago or something, you couldn't really get, you could get them here, but they were really, really expensive. But like the actual brand, Crampos, wasn't really brought in here yet. And so I was like, I'm just going to buy one, put it in my backpack. And it's heavy because it's like heavy. And I just trudged around Europe with this giant crepe maker, and you know what? Worth it. Totally worth it. Amazing piece of equipment. It has so many spider arms of gas underneath. It's so even, and when you flip the cast iron piece over the top, it has like a bunch of fins to spread out the gas flame so that it's really even, and it can scream. So here's the thing about crepes. The thing about crepes when you're making regular crepes, we're about to go into this question in a minute, is recovery time, right? So people are using a little stove, and then you're putting a crepe on. You're like, well, the crepe's not that big, so it can't be that big of a deal to cook it. But you're covering the entire surface of your cooking area with wet. And when you cover the entire surface of your cooking area with wet, and you need it to be like a relatively even shade of brown from the middle to the outside, and you're using a regular stove, you're hosed. Yeah. You're ruined unless you have like a giant thing. So the answer is that these people who are making their awesome crepes at home have to make it into relatively small pans. Mm-hmm. Like that's the answer. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or if you had like an AccuSteam would be the ultimate thing to make crepes on. But no one AccuSteam does not make a crepe maker. But I guess you could make it in their regular square griddle. Because AccuSteam stars. That's the company that what they do is they literally have a double walled stainless sandwich when they heat the steam up on the inside to such a high pressure that it actually can cook pancakes. But the cool thing is they have it at such a high pressure that it can cook pancakes up at 350, 360. It's amazing. You ever use one of those, Lauren? They're amazing.
I think we had one in culinary school, but yeah.
See, that's what they do. Culinary school, like companies are like, they're like crack dealers. Yeah. They give you your first hit free in culinary school and then you're like, oh, that was awesome when I was using that, and then you want to buy one in your restaurant, but apparently it did not work. But anyway, I should send you one,
Dave.
That would be nice.
Every time I'm on the air with you, you name check AccuSteam.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Maybe it's just something about you, Paul, makes me think of AccuSteam.
Don't they have a deep fryer too?
Maybe they make a deep fryer. I don't know. Like I'm buying a what? Really?
Yeah.
That would be sick. But, like, I'm like, no, but, like, right now, like, we're probably going to get a CVAP for the new place for hot holding.
Oh, when are you
going
to buy our old 3D printer, that giant one?
Oh, Nastasia now is bringing up old bad memories.
I thought I did buy it. You just have to deliver it.
Okay. Anyway, so back to what were we talking about? Cakes?
AccuSteam? Crepes.
Buckwheat crepes. So, anyway, so the deal with a crepe is a standard crepe batter is, like, relatively fluid, like, one-to-one or similar with eggs and, milk, flour, like, similar to one-to-one. That eggs, whatever, I salt, and I add a little sugar because I'm monkey nut or whatever. Anyway,
everyone has to add sugar.
Yeah, whatever. I add a little bit. I'm sure I'm a bad human, but whatever. I add vanilla flavor, too.
The silent killer.
Yeah. I add vanilla flavor and occasionally, like, a hit of liqueur and or sherry because, you know why? Because it's my freaking house and I can do what I want.
Do you do the Grand Marnier kind of thing?
No, it's just so much money. You know what I mean? To actually flame it out? Anyway, so, like, yeah, you know, I hate to say this because, like, you never know where your bread's going to be buttered next. Speaking of bread buttered, I was at Kansas City, and we could talk about, like, their Texas toast machine and the auto buttering. Have you seen these machines, these toasters, and they use the top of the toaster? They have a roll in it that goes through the butter, and it's just basically, like, a steamroller of butter, and it's just, like, I'm looking at it, and like my mind is going back to the 1970s. They had this advertisement for cheese where they're like, hanker for a hunker, a slab of slice of chunka, hanker for a hunk of cheese. And they say, look, a wagon wheel, because they want you to eat cheese in the form of a wagon wheel because they think kids will like it. And so I'm sitting here in Kansas City, and this is a complete non sequitur. My brain's just going, wagon wheel butter, wagon wheel butter. I'm looking at it, I'm watching the toast go in, toast by toast by toast by toast by toast. And I'm pretty sure that there's something in there for me with a Texas toast steamed cheese combo.
Ooh.
It's going to be freaking, that's going to be the money in the bank right there. That's going to be the money. Anyways.
So, hey, you want to take a call?
Yeah, well, okay, then we'll get to buckwheat crepes after it. Oh, they're gone. They're gone. All right, so.
Couldn't wait to.
When you get them back, just let me know, we'll do it. But back to crepes. So the trick with crepes is you make that batter, you beat it up, and then you let it sit for a long time. You strain out the lumps, you get rid of the bubbles. Bubbles are your enemy.
Yes.
Because they pop and mess up they mess up your rapletting action, and if you have any unhydrated particles of flour at all, they just tear through your crepe when you're working, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing about crepes is that you're better off making the batter, letting it hydrate, and then thicker than you need. Mm-hmm. Letting it hydrate 100% for as long as you want, and then thinning it to exactly the right consistency beforehand so that it's right. So that's a regular crepe. But regular crepes are relatively easy to work with if you follow those simple instructions. You take your ladle, you go broop, you put it onto your crepe maker, and you just take your raplet and you drop it down and you gently wipe it in a circular motion. The crepe gets large, it gets beautiful, you see it get brown, you flip it over, maybe you paste it with butter or spray it with Pam or whatever in the hell you do. I don't know what you do, it's your house. You flip it over, you take it off, and then, you know, the thing is, what do you think about reheating the crepes? What do you think about people like making the stack and then reheating it as opposed to just making them? They're better when they're just made.
They absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that that's never happened, you know, and I'll eat them and everything like that. But yeah, and honestly, I kind of think you only really notice if you did it side to side, like side by side. Like if you had them fresh earlier that morning and then later on that day you reheat them, yeah, you're like, okay, it's not as good. But if they didn't, if, you know.
Right. Okay, how about this one? Best crepe, best dosa.
Where do I find them?
No, no.
Oh.
No, like, which would you eat right now if I hand it to you?
I don't know, right now, crepe, I would say, really? Because I haven't had a crepe in probably 2 years.
Paul?
I would eat 10 doses
really?
While you were 10. Still trying to hand me the crepe.
Yeah, and Nastassi's like, I don't like either crap on you. So, am I right or no?
No, I would eat the crepe.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so let's get to the actual question.
Now, dosas crisp this. Up.
You know what? The secret, I think, is first of all, like the interesting thing about dosas, and the reason I bring them up is unlike a standard crepe, they are a gluten-free recipe, and they rely on the natural hydrocolloids in the dal to create their texture, and they use a mixture of dal, like so you have like an urad dal and like rice. And then, like, but, like, this one place out in Queens, they're like, our secret is we add a little bit of chano, chickpea, to it, and that's how they get their texture. And I have to say, their stuff's pretty on point.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about the reason I bring dosa up is because dosa does have that crispy texture, and it is a gluten-free kind of a situation. And so, like, you look at dosa technology. But anyway, so let's see what problems Caleb is having with galettes, a.k.a. buckwheat crepes. Part of my perfect Sunday morning involves a big batch of crepes with various accompaniments, both sweet, butter, lemon, sugar, and savory, egg, and Gruyere. Ooh, I like myself some Gruyere. Even Nastassia likes herself some Gruyere. Yeah, hell yeah. Do you know what I like? I like cheesesteak with Gruyere.
That's
good.
Yeah,
it's good. It's good.
Oh, you know, fancy.
It's not, I mean, it is fancy in the sense
Dave
that it costs
cheese
money.
Fridge.
What?
You have a cheese fridge.
I have a wine fridge that was given to me, and I put cheese into it when I have cheese. You know what else is good on cheesesteak, though? Queso. You like queso?
Mm.
Love a queso.
Is there anyone that doesn't like queso?
Alex Dupac. No, just kidding.
Come on. He doesn't like queso?
No, he actually...
Is it Nasa?
No, at Cosina. At Cosina, he redid his... He redid a version of a Tex-Mex queso... But of course, he schmancied it up.
I believe that, but I'm saying if he goes to somebody's house and they have Rotel and Velveeta and chips, does he dip into?
Of course.
Yes, because you know why? It tastes good.
Yeah.
That's why.
But if anyone Instagrammed him doing that, he'd be like,
"Ah,
smash your phone."
Yeah, 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 yeah. I love that. That's what I love. Don't do that to Stupak. You know what I mean? Don't. You know what? Like, imagine if Nastasia hung out with him every day, that he would be dead, God. Because you would boil his blood on a constant basis. Because there's nothing Nastasia loves more than finding someone who she can make, like, their blood boil and then, like, set on boil, jet boil, jet boil, jet boil, jet boil. You know what I mean? She's like a, like, you know what? It's like Nastasia likes to play people like Joust. Do you remember that video game Joust?
I love Joust.
Yeah, it's knights on ostriches and they flap their wings and you have to keep it at just the right level because if you let go, they crash and you can't get them back up again. But if you go too high, they fly up. And Nastasia is the master Joust player with people's anger. So she keeps people like right at the layer where they're flapping at that like one level of anger. Anyways. I have long mastered basic crepes, we're back to the question, and produce pleasing, delicate, lacy key crepes based on a batter of AP flour, eggs, and milk. Occasionally, I will go 50-50 with rye, whole wheat, or buckwheat. Whole wheat, actually, a pain in the butt with crepes unless you have very finely milled stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's going to tear your crepe.
Yeah, you know what I really like for whole wheat? Soft flour is like chapati flour because it's like it's very fine, like floury. It doesn't have those like bran particles that are going to mess your stuff up. How you doing there? Boring.
He's boring.
He's so boring.
Okay. And yet the traditional buckwheat galette eludes me. This savory crepe made from Brittany, made only with buckwheat flour and water. Most articles on them seem to suggest they are impossible to make at home without adding eggs under milk. But to me, this creates a different product. When I mix buckwheat flour in water and let it sit overnight and try to make crepes the next day, they don't spread well, they stick, and they come out too thick despite thinning the batter. And then he says, look at David Leibowitz's article, Pimp My Crepes. I'm not sure, like, I don't think it's acceptable anymore to say you're pimping. Like, if you really think about what pimping is, it's not cool. Like, you don't want to pimp your, you know, turn your pimp into
a... What do you think, Paul?
You want to turn your crepe into a sex slave?
Back to the question.
Okay. What's going on here? Some suggest that the creperies have higher heat than home stoves. That is true.
Yeah.
That's definitely. Just straight up true. But I'm not buying. You should buy it. Their stuff is sick. Yeah. Those crampouses are sick. Doesn't mean you can't make it at home. Yes, buckwheat has little or no gluten. No, I think. But you know what? Someone was like, it's not a grain. I read this on the internet. It's not a grain. It's a seed. What do you think freaking grains are? If you plant one of those things, it grows. And you know what that makes it? A seed. Anyway, are there any tricks, suggestions, or thoughts as to what's going on and what magic the creperies have that I am missing? Many thanks. Look forward to seeing your lecture in Cambridge next week. That's too late. That was last week. And then P.S., Nastasia, I also dislike cumin. Are you a cumin or a cumin sayer, people? I'm a cumin sayer.
Cumin.
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 Cumin. We're all cumin here.
Yeah. But you say aunt. You say aunt.
Yeah.
Really?
That's true.
Uh-huh.
I say my Aunt Sandy.
Uh-huh.
But you were born in Stanford.
Auntie Jen. If it's auntie, it's not auntie.
No, I say auntie.
I would never say auntie. I'd say auntie.
Auntie Matter?
Aunt. I do say auntie Matter. That would be my drag science teacher name. Auntie Matter. So I dislike cumin and thought I was the only one. To me, it smells like B.O. Not
yes.
that stops my wife from using it all the time. Well, you can't have chili without cumin. You can't. It's not chili.
It's not real. Yeah.
What is it, Nastasia, without cumin?
Soup.
Tomato soup. tomato beef stew soup. Do you like pork chili?
I think so.
Yeah? I like pork chili. Like, not like, you know, a traditional, like, thing, but flavor of chili, meat of pork.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, right?
I agree.
Yes. Very
okay.
good.
So, my tips and tricks. One, I went on the internets and I looked up to see some actual, how do you pronounce Brittany? Breton. How do you pronounce those guys? Anyway, like the Brittany people,
yeah.
right?
Breton.
Making their galettes. And they do not use the same raclette technique as a standard AP flour crepe maker. So I would look at what they do. So when you're, like I told you, when you're making a standard crepe, you're like you're ladling it down and then you're like, you're wiping it through. These folks, they put it on pretty hard. It spreads out, like, pretty good from the get-go. And then they do, like, a double push to push it out into a wider thing. And then they just do a touch-up with the raclette to get it around. So they're not using the standard wipe-around technique that you would use. They're using a different push technique. One. Two, I really think the key here is long, long hydration. I really think the key is going to be letting the batter, making it thicker than you want, resting it, not 100% thick, but thicker than you want, letting it rest overnight. And there's two things that are going on here. I don't know the, and this is why another reason I brought up doses earlier, I don't know the actual chemistry of what's going on here, but I know that other gluten-free things like millets, if you ferment or even lightly ferment millet for, let's say, 12 hours before you use it, you have a much better rheology, texture in your batters and doughs that are made with the millet, because as they ferment, they make other stuff that actually helps the batter, right? Mm-hmm. And so my guess is if the standard full-on, like, you know, Breton galette is with a batter that is at least overnight or possibly longer old, that it probably don't work unless you do that. They also, you know, the Leibowitz thing said that they use organic flour. This might mean French for bad flour, i.e. damaged flour. And so maybe the damaged flour is helping out. I don't know. Because often recipes, if you have damaged starch granules, act very differently. Right, Lauren?
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So like the flour they're using might be different than the flour you're using. So I would look to buy like a similar kind of flour to the one they're using. I would look to rest it overnight because for two reasons. Like I said, there's probably some fermentation going on, which will change the rheology. And they will also finish the hydration. And like hydration and letting it like hydrate properly, I think is a key in many recipes that don't involve gluten. Mm-hmm. It just is. Like doses like take forever because you have to soak them, then grind them, then ferment them to get them to work right. So I would say those are the two keys, and I would look at videos on the internet for people's raclette technique to see whether you get
Absolutely,
it right.
Yeah. And they're everywhere right now. I mean, honestly, you go on Instagram and you can see a ton of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love me. Like, I've learned so much. You know what I haven't learned from YouTube yet? The accurate Turkish coffee technique. I'm just not good at it.
No.
But you know a lot about what's his name? Dax's favorite guy.
Oh my God, Dax watches these terrible YouTube people. And then he gets mad. He's like, they're my idol. I'm like, so there's this guy. He's like the most famous, like one of the top paid YouTube people on earth.
Paid for what?
Being on YouTube. His name is Luke Paul and his brother. Luke Paul? One of these Paul brothers. Anyways.
RuPaul?
I wish it was RuPaul. If it was RuPaul, that would be awesome. Yeah, but like, no, this is just a guy who is like a 21-year-old like guy who breaks plates and has millions of followers. He'll like walk into a hotel and break a plate on the internet. Anyway, so...
You want to take a quick break on your done?
Yeah. So here's the thing. So like, Dax's dirtbag buddy, one of his friends, has a shirt from this guy and it says Maverick. I'm like, you can't glom on to someone's internet personality and be a maverick. They don't fit. It doesn't work.
It doesn't make sense.
I'm wearing a t-shirt that just says what I am. Low quality individual. That's just true. You know what I mean? Maverick. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back with more cooking issues.
Bob's Red Mill's products stand the test of time, even if we're talking about the beginning of time. Bob's has a wide range of paleo-friendly products, but what is paleo anyway?
So yeah, I've been doing the paleo diet for a couple months now, and I'm feeling great. I think I'm going to stick with it.
I keep hearing about this paleo diet. Doesn't it just mean you, like, eat a lot of steaks or something? I love brunch too much to stick to one specific diet.
I get that, but it's mostly about cutting out processed foods and simple carbohydrates. According to the paleo diet, our bodies weren't genetically designed to digest that stuff.
Well, I don't know about the whole genetic argument. Besides, I don't know why anyone would cut out bread who wasn't allergic to it. I love bread.
Psh, you're just mad because you wouldn't be able to give it up. I dare you to try paleo with me for the next week. I know you love bread and sweets made with traditional flours, but Bob's Red Mill makes a paleo baking flour. So you can make cookies, muffins, even pizza crust while sticking to the caveman diet.
Cookies and pizza. Okay, that changes things. I'm in.
No matter what diet you follow, Bob's Red Mill has you covered. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Wait, what?
Why is that on our show?
Wait, I was like, paleo, what?
The reason I've been avoiding pizza is because it's processed. But if I could have a pizza that's completely as it comes off the tree.
Yeah, you know what was really a net loss for humanity? Agriculture.
I know.
You know what I mean? Because you know
Such
what?
A shame.
You know what? There's so many paths that would have led to the iPhone that don't go through agriculture first.
That's true.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know what? It's like, I'm pretty sure, yeah, that we would still have music and culture if we were gathering berries. Oh, wait. We would only be able to live in, like, the five places on Earth that have food all the time. You know what I mean?
No, we'd be nomadic, and our apps would help us find the food.
Anyone take a call?
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey there. What's up, Nastasia, David, Dave, crying baby, and I believe I heard Paul in the background there.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Paul and Lauren.
This is Marcel calling from a bed of kohlrabi in the Hudson Valley.
Oh, nice. Are you, like, so instead of using hemlock boughs to make your camping beds, you're just like lying in kohlrabi? That'd be amazing.
Exactly.
Awesome. All right.
So my question is, there's a lot of really nice wild grapes that grow up here, and I've been making wild grape syrup. And I like, when I make it, I do it at a lower temperature. Like, I do it in sous vide at like 130 or 120 sometimes, because I feel like when I cook it, it gets this sort of, like, the flavor almost of when you think of fruit on a pie. That really cooked sort of berry flavor.
Uh-huh.
And I want to make some kind of jelly out of it because I really I think it would taste good as a jelly, but I don't want it to have that classic sort of cooked flavor. And all the recipes I find involve like boiling it with the pectin and other steps like that. So I'm basically wondering for advice on something that's sort of like a jelly, but it is made without boiling it at any point.
Mm. All right, so I mean, the thing is, at those low temperatures, you're just really pasteurizing it, right? I mean, you're just looking to pasteurize it. At those temperatures, they won't even pop, right?
Right. So basically, I'm putting all of the grapes in a bag with sugar, and then I sous vide it, and I massage it every once in a while to get as much of the juice out as I can. I'm not really cooking it.
Got it. Here's what I would do. So I'll tell you a technique that I did never for service because it's a huge pain in the butt, but maybe it'll give you an idea based on it. So I once took a strawberry, clarified it, removed like enough water that I was up at like 70-something percent solids in the liquid. It was like, or even a little bit higher, so it was like a syrup, it would have set. And then I heated a bunch of sugar until it was, you know, just starting to blonde out, right? So it was like, would have been candy. And then I mixed the two things together to make like a taffy. And that, because I never cooked the strawberry because it was low temperature, even though I was mixing it into a high temperature thing, right, it still retained because it cooled off relatively quickly. So what I'm about to recommend to you is this. I would make a like sugar, pectin, some grape or grape juice with some sugar, reduce it, add a boat ton of pectin because you're going to need it, right? Then like do the boil out, then fold in your warm, I wouldn't go cold because you're going to get pre-gel and all this other stuff, but I'd fold in your warm grapes so that you maintain. Now, that is not going to last because you haven't cooked those grapes. So if you've pasteurized them, you're probably not going to get sick, but it's going to weep like a mother over time. And I know this because my classic strategy for blueberry pie, because blueberry pie, Lauren, right or wrong, you got to eat it right away anyway.
Absolutely.
So I cheat. Uh-huh. I cheat on my pies. I blind bake the crust. Why? Because I suck. And then I make a blueberry basically jelly fundamentally. Mm-hmm. I pour it hot into my blind bake crust, and then I throw a bunch of fresh blueberries into it. They sink down. And it's good for exactly one day, and then the fresh blueberries turn to garbage. What do you think? What do you think about any suggestions, Paul or Lauren? What's going on here
with the pie?
No. With the grapes, saying the things that I've done is similar. Like what?
Make
like,
that jam with. Don't cook the grapes, but cook the pectin and keep it in the freezer so it doesn't weep.
Freezer, but you can't eat frozen jelly.
Yeah, you can.
Really?
Yeah, it's gelatinous.
Do you know, you're familiar with Sam Mason's awesome frozen liquid nitrogen jelly technique in ice cream?
No.
He freezes the jelly in liquid nitrogen until it shatters like glass, then puts it into the ice cream, and then lets it melt out in these awesome blobs. That's why, I mean, like, you got to love Sam, right?
Oh, totally.
Sam, good man. Smart man.
He's in supermarkets now.
Mayonnaise really? Man.
Him personally or yes. his products?
I office. Saw him in a supermarket.
Imagine that. He's be like, I'm going to check out. Out. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, Sam, what's up, man?
Like, it's can so you double crazy. Check that, please?
You imagine, like the kind of coolest checkout guy ever, like this like tall pastry chef. You know, like he's like a younger kind of like and alive, like Chris Cornell. He's got that Chris Cornell vibe, doesn't he? A little bit. Some sort of. He's got a rock and roll vibe.
He has a rock and roll vibe.
All right. Anyway, is this making any sense, Grapes?
Yeah, that makes sense. My only question would be if there's something else you could think of that I could add that would somehow prevent the weeping, or if there's no way.
No,
to
but
do
you're
that.
Not cooking it. Oh, you're smashing them, though. Yeah, you could stabilize it with, I don't know, what hydrocolloid would I use? But I'm like, any hydrocolloid you stabilize, the good thing about pectin, very good with flavor release, very, very good. That's why those, like, you know, those pectin-based candies are pretty good, is that they have a very high flavor release, or like, what do you call those, pâte
fuite,
which I love those suckers.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's actually, at first, when he was asking the question, I was in my mind saying, well, he said jelly, but is he talking about, like, jellies, like, pâte fuite? But it clearly was...
Yeah, but that would be really hard to do.
Yeah. Well, and also, I was questioning, are the grapes green or red or...
Hey, what do you got?
These are, like, they're wild upstate grapes, so they're basically, like, tiny Concord grapes, kind
of. Oh, okay, good. Because I was going to say one of the biggest issues with not cooking the grapes, too, would also be that they would oxidize and look brown and gross.
Right, but he's taking them to, like... Yeah, he's pasteurizing them. He's killing the yeast on them at this temperature. By the way, have you read The Grapes of New York, edited by U.P. Hedrick?
No, I should do that, though, because I'm pretty obsessed with them, so...
Yeah, so you need to go on the internet right now, Internet Archive, and look up The Grapes of New York, part of the Fruits of New York series, edited, with the exception of Apples of New York, which was edited by S.A. Beach, edited by U.P. Hedrick, and it is available on the internets, and The Grapes of New York, I believe, has wild-type varieties and also all the weird, obscure ones with plates... I can't remember the year of Grapes of New York, but my guess is it's somewhere like 19... It's either like 1920 or 1919 or something like that, but go check it out. U.P.
Uh-huh.
Hedrick.
Cool.
And believe it or not, awesome. He's from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
1908, the internet says.
1908. Well, thank God for the internet. There you go. The last one, the last series they did was in the 20s, and it was The Vegetables of New York, but they never finished it. And my favorite title of all of the series is The Cucurbits of New York. Because it's like melons, cucumbers, cucurbits. And so like there's a couple like are you familiar with the group Culture from Jamaica, the reggae group?
Yeah.
So in my head, like I have all whenever I hear that word, I'm like, ding, 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 cucurbit, 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 taking over. I don't know why. For some reason, it's in my head anyway. So I have reggae cucurbit going through my head right now. Anyway, tell us what goes on with this, and let me know how it works out, and maybe someone in the chat room here has some suggestions.
We're out of time,
awesome.
Dave.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
All right, cool. Wait, we have no time?
You got through one question.
No, I got to say bye.
What'd say?
We got to say goodbye.
All right, listen. On the way out, Spinzalls have started showing up. We hope you like them. We've shipped, apparently all of them have left Hong Kong, but we don't have individual tracking numbers for non-U.S. and for about, I think, 40 of you guys that are in the U.S. But like Southern California, SoCal, where you guys are from, they've already received, most of the people in SoCal have received their stuff. Let us know how it works. Email Matthew@BookerandDax.com if you have any questions or comments. We want to hear from you. We want to help you use them better. And thanks for coming, Lauren. Thanks, Paul.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Now they're happy. What are you playing there? Anyway, cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaeli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, the French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.